Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. Hope you're well. We're looking ahead to the North London Derby this weekend, and of course it comes in a week after which we've crashed out of the Capital One Cup at the hands of Southampton, or the feet of Southampton, of all people. I don't know why I said of all people there, because there's no particular relevance, is there, to Southampton, but sometimes it's just good to add a little extra something to give it drama. It'd be like if you go into a cafe and said, I'd like a ham sandwich and a cup of coffee, or else. That would certainly add some tension to the moment. Not that you're necessarily going to do anything, and it probably would result in a situation that doesn't turn out great. Either they call security, you know, these cafes and the high-tech security they have, or you get the sandwich that someone dropped on the floor a bit earlier. But, you know, you've got to live life on the edge a bit. So we lost to Southampton, of all people. And we'll discuss that in a few moments' time. We will, of course, be looking ahead to the game against Tottenham. We've got the winner of our competition from last week, in which we gave you a chance to win a copy of Together, the Story of Arsenal's Unbeaten Season, the hardback. What else? What else is there? Oh, we'll touch on the... I don't know. Stop stressing me out. I don't know what's coming between now and the end of the show, because frankly, I just sort of make it up as I go along, which does make it difficult. I know vaguely, you know, what's going to happen, but there you go. And I'm very much in making it up as I go along territory this week, because it's just one of those weeks. There's no defining thing. I know we've got that thing going on with Stan Kroenke and his money, don't we? The £3 million payment that he paid his own company for advising himself, when the advice was probably, you should pay yourself £3 million. Now, it does set a little bit of, not a worrying precedent, but, you know, it is a little bit unclear as to exactly what the services rendered were that were worthy of £3 million. Because that's a lot of money. That's a David Ospina, minus one leg, or at least to the knee. I think it was £3.5 million. You know, it's a lot. It's 12 Colo Toures of a young age, a young vintage. I don't know what a Colo Toure goes for now on the open market. Probably a bit less than what we paid for him, 250,000. So 3 million's a lot of money. I certainly would pay myself £3 million if I could do it. And you know what? If people objected to that, I think I'd be very much like, well, you know, fuck you. I'm going to do it anyway. And I think that's kind of what Kroenke's done. He said, I'll dip my toe in the water here and see what the response is like, because I can't do the whole dividends thing. Nuh-uh, it's not possible. So I'll just render some services unto myself and then pay myself for those services, and then we'll see what the reaction is. And after that, well, you know, I'll make a judgment call. And it should make the AGM quite interesting, assuming anyone's allowed to ask the question in the first place. Because they do vet the questions, don't they? You get somebody put their hand over, you got a question, and it's yes, and it's, why are there so many pigeons on the roof? And the questions that people want answered aren't necessarily the ones that are allowed to be asked. But we'll see. We'll see this time around. And then Stan will sit there and he'll go, I don't give a fuck. I can do what I want here, essentially. And there's not much any of you can do about it because, you know, I own 66% of everything. And who's going to stop me? Who amongst you is going to stand up and stop me, Stan Kroenke, master of the universe? You can do nothing, mere mortals. So there. You'd kind of have to respect him a little bit if he did that. But we'll have to just wait and see how this whole financial thing plays out. I'm just not sure I like the idea that after years of us cutting our cloth and having to sell all our best players, without the millionaire, billionaire owner putting anything into the club, and I don't have an issue with that because I like the idea that we buy, we spend what we earn, etc., etc. I think that's good and it's healthy, but I think after all the years of parsimony and austerity that we went through and with ticket price rises, the minute things start getting good, he's paying his own company money. I mean, it's a little bit dodgy. I mean, if Kroenke had been one of those guys who had said, when things were bad, look, here, buy a couple of players and that might help you keep your Fabregas guy and the Van Persie guy and these guys who left essentially to play for more competitive teams. And then he took a few quid now, you might say, well, it's not ideal, but you know. But no. There was never anything like that. All he ever did was buy shares. So I wonder if we'll get an explanation for this, or if it'll just be Kroenke master of the universe thing again, which I suspect probably. But we'll see. We'll see. So Capital One Cup action in midweek. Bit disappointing. I thought the team was probably about right. We couldn't risk any of the senior defenders, even though Callum Chambers played, but I think, as we discussed on one of the Arscast extras, he's younger and his recovery time wouldn't be as much as Koscielny or Mertesacker, both of whom are carrying injuries. Mertesacker's got a wonky glute, apparently. Koscielny's still got a bit of an Achilles niggle. Kieran Gibbs, his hamstring's not 100%, and with Nacho Monreal out for a while till after the next interlull, which is after the Chelsea game. We couldn't risk anybody there. Very young back four who I thought played pretty well overall, considering Southampton were decent. It was just that, we didn't have the thing up front to build on the great goal that Alexis scored. And what a free kick. What a free kick that was. After the Man City game, a number of people emailed me to say, look at the amount of free kicks we got in dangerous positions, and not one of them was on target. A number of them, we didn't even go for goal. What's going on there? And I had to agree that, it's an area we've been lacking in down the years. Van Persie, let's face it, if he hit a free kick right, it was blinding. Great free kicks, but they were what, 1 in 40? The rest of them, no. Yeah. They'd end up in the stand or somewhere else. And it was great to see Alexis step up and actually just do exactly what we've needed somebody to do with a free kick for quite a long time. Santi Cazorla's got a good free kick on him, as we know, from FA Cup final. But maybe Alexis has got that little bit extra. And it's good to have somebody like that in your team, to have those options in attacking areas rather than, oh, look, we hit the wall again, or look, oh, look, it's just landed in the front garden of the Tollington there. But unfortunately, that goal was the highlight of the evening from an Arsenal point of view. Not saying we gifted them two goals. We certainly gave away a silly penalty, and then, well, their second goal was really quite special. Brilliant hit from Klein. Could have closed it down. I thought the ball moved quite a bit, actually. When you see it from behind, you can see Ospina thinking it's going one way and then it just swerves the other and he can't correct himself in time. And maybe other goalkeepers would have got a hard time there, but I don't know. I think it's a bit harsh. Overall, not a bad debut for the Colombian, but not certainly the kind of debut that would make you think, well, Chesney's under real pressure here. And seeing as Ospina's probably not going to get a game until, well, I don't know when. Unless Chesney's form hits the toilet, he's probably not going to play again unless we've got a dead rubber in the Champions League. And the way we started that competition, I'm not sure that's going to be possible. So we'll have to see. Manager will assess all that in training. And look, we're out of a competition which, in fairness, provides a relatively realistic hope of a trophy for us. And it's a disappointment, and disappointing that some of the players can't play on. But look, what we'll do is continue this discussion of the Capital One Cup game with our guest this week. And it's a welcome back to the show for the presenter of The Breakdown on Arsenal.com, among many other things. It's Adrian Clark. Hi there.
Hello, Andrew.
Can we start, please, with the Capital One Cup in midweek? A disappointment in terms of the result, obviously, that we're out now, but on the night, Arsene Wenger, I guess, had to rotate his squad and had to bring some of the fringe players in, the likes of Podolski, Rosicki, Joel Campbell up front. And at the back, Arsenal were very raw, I think might be a good word to describe it. How did you feel the young defenders did? Because to my mind, I thought those guys acquitted themselves under the circumstances quite well, and the disappointment was further up the pitch.
Yeah, Arsenal didn't lose this match because of the youngsters in defence, that's for sure. I think they can all look back on it with reasonable pride. It wasn't easy, I've got to say. Mm. Southampton had a really good strike force. Tadic, Mane and Pella. Three good players, excellent talents. And I would say that they had their hands full. I mean, Hector Bellerin, I think some of his positioning could have been a touch better, but he's got such pace that he's able to get back in and save the day, and he did that a few times. Callum Chambers was pretty solid. I thought Isaac Hayden actually caught the eye.
Yeah, I agree.
Strong and confident, and didn't look at all fazed by the occasion. And Coquelin at right back, he did a solid job. I think it kind of affected the balance of the team, the fact that he can't really get forward like a typical Arsenal left back would get forward. But defensively, he was fine. So no, they all did all right. It was just a little bit flat, wasn't it? Further forward, I thought, anyway.
Yeah, just on Coquelin there, because I thought he had a really good game. And you, he's a central midfield player, as we know, a right-footed central midfield player being asked to play a left back. From your point of view as a left-footed midfield player, how would you have fared at right back?
It'd have been my worst nightmare. I'd have been in a state of complete panic. So he did all right. Yeah, he's got a little bit of defensive nous, Coquelin. He's got plenty of experience. He's not what you'd call a kid anymore. Mm. And I think he's going to find it hard, really, to get into the Arsenal midfield this season. So I would have thought he was grateful for the opportunity to get out there. And I think given the fact that he's probably not played left back for a long, long, long time, he did pretty well. But yeah, it was one of those games where you can say lots of players did okay, but very few players really shone, and that was a disappointment.
Going back to the issue up front, people were disappointed, obviously, that we didn't score more than we did. A great free kick from Alexis, but apart from that, we didn't threaten hugely. Lukas Podolski, Thomas Rosicki looked quite rusty. Joel Campbell, again, didn't really make a big impact on the game. How much of that do we put down to the fact that they just haven't played very much this season?
A lot. I just think it's something that people don't take into account enough. When you've hardly kicked a football competitively for weeks or months, it's really hard, and you get rusty and you get tired quicker, and when you're tired you make more mistakes. I definitely felt that we saw that with Thomas Rosicki. He was trying, he was everywhere, but there was just an element of rustiness about his game. Some of his decision making wasn't as smart as it usually is, I guess. So that was what we saw with him. With Joel Campbell possibly trying a little bit too hard, and I would like to have seen him up front. I'd like to see him down the middle. He just was a touch predictable, cutting inside from that right flank onto his left foot, running into trouble a touch. So that's something he'll learn from. And yeah, Lukas Podolski was probably the biggest disappointment, because he was very quiet and didn't seem to work hard enough to get himself in the game. That would be my criticism of him.
Yeah, would you have, I think a lot of people, and I think I would have liked to have seen Chuba Akpom perhaps given a run a little bit earlier than he was, given the way Podolski was playing.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the game was kind of crying out for Chuba Akpom, because Alexis, he can do a job up front, but he's very much learning how to play that role in this Arsenal team. He's far from the finished article in that area. And Arsenal aren't used to having a striker that kind of goes everywhere, and they're used to having somebody up there, aren't they, to bounce balls off, and that wasn't happening. So yeah, I think if Chib Rackpong had come on earlier, it would have given the guys around him a bit more chance to kind of get better possession. As it happened, everyone was kind of floating here, there and everywhere, but there was no penetration. It was one of those nights where that final ball, that moment of magic was sadly lacking, apart from obviously Alexis's free kick goal.
Yeah, and a bit of a shame. I mean, regardless of the competition itself, and some people don't hold it in great stock, it is a competition that has been beneficial to us, even if we haven't gone all the way to the final, that it does give these young players a chance to play. And when you look at the situation at the back, where Arsene Wenger's talking about Mertesacker and Gibbs carrying injuries, you know, they should be fine, obviously, for the weekend, but, you know, we don't have a great deal of depth there. It would have been good if we'd gone another couple of rounds to give these guys the first-team experience that's so valuable.
Definitely, definitely. I do agree with that. It's a useful way of keeping players fit. Arsene Wenger's done it down the years, and he's not won the League Cup, but he's got very close on occasions, and then the record's pretty good. I'm not a fan of kind of wholesale changes. I think it's really hard for players to come in and shine when everybody is a whole new 11. Nobody's used to one another. It's a difficult environment to come in to and impress, and those young guys, you fear for them now. I mean, when is Isaac Hayden going to get another run out, and Coquelin and these getting Bellerin? Well, Bellerin hopefully, well, he'll no doubt be on the bench a fair bit in the coming weeks, but you don't know how much action he's going to get. So yeah, it's a shame for all concerned, really, but yeah, I would have liked Arsenal not just for the youngster's sake, but just for the club's sake.
Sure.
To fade in the competition, because it's a cup, and it feels good winning a cup, as we know from May. So I was just a bit sad that we made the early exit.
Going back then to what happened at Villa Park last Saturday, and maybe Arsenal's most convincing Premier League display of the season, or certainly the most convincing win, 3-0, with Mesut Ozil and Danny Welbeck looking very good together. Obviously, it happened in a short burst, but that's often the way that matches are decided, that you just have these moments that change games, and we had three of those moments very close together. Were you encouraged by the signs that existed between Ozil and Welbeck? I know it's very early to start drawing any real conclusions, but it just sort of highlighted what we've been missing over the last little while. Pace in behind, somebody with an eye for a pass, good delivery into the box, and a striker in there poaching. The two goals they conjured up between them were fantastic.
They were, yeah. No, I was really encouraged. Look, Villa weren't very good on the day, it has to be said, and Mesut Ozil was kind of given the freedom of the park by the Villa midfield, who just couldn't get to grips with him at all. I did like the fact that Ozil and Welbeck were playing closer to one another. So when the ball went up to Welbeck, he immediately had someone in and around him he could knock the ball off to and then get into the box. We saw that for the goal, of course. I did like the way Danny Welbeck sprinted into the area for that goal. That showed real desire. And yeah, look, it's hard to tell, because I think Villa were off it on the day, but the system, the fact that Ozil was playing more centrally, it seemed to suit Ozil, it seemed to suit Welbeck, and it seemed to suit the rest of the team. So I'd probably be a little bit surprised if the manager didn't stick with that for the weekend coming, because it was quite hard. You obviously have to analyse the game for the breakdown and whatnot, and I always try and look at it objectively and pick faults, and some games are easier than others. But in this particular match, it wasn't easy to find faults. I thought it was a pretty polished performance, and with the ball, it was easily the best Arsenal have played this season.
You know, given that you do analyse every game and have to look at the way the team is set up and the shape of it and the tactical aspect of things, Was this more of a return to the system that we saw last season with Ramsey and Arteta playing a little bit closer together? And is that now, having seen the way that that worked, is that the blueprint? You said you'd be surprised if he changed it, but we know Arsene is very much a man of his own mind. But to me, it seems like this is the way that we've got to play, given the players that we have in certain areas of the team.
Yeah, it's just something the players are used to and they're comfortable with that system. You know what you're going to get. What I did notice in that game was there was a real rotation. We saw different players popping into it. Wasn't Ozil just didn't stay in the number 10 position. He moved out wide when he wanted to. And then we saw Ramsey push on or Cazorla come inside or even the Ox came in from the right quite a bit and played centrally. There was a definite more fluidity about the team. And that's probably because they just felt more comfortable. I think they knew their jobs a little bit better. The 4-1-4-1, I think it can work really well, but especially in away games or especially in tough games where you come up against a really powerful midfield. But it seems to me like the players have almost taken the system too literally. They've stopped being as fluid in that.
Yeah.
And like Mesut Ozil, let's take him for as an example. The manager's gone on record lots of times, and I believe him when he says that Mesut Ozil, when Arsenal have the ball in that system, he doesn't have to stay on the left wing, but he has stayed on the left wing or the right wing or wherever, whichever wing position he's been asked to play. He just hasn't moved away from it enough. And so if he does go back to that, I'd just like to see Mesut.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Just roam around and do his thing, but if you're comparing them, the 4-2-3-1 with Ozil given a complete free role, he seems happier and the team seems happier. So yeah, I think that might be the way to go.
Something that a number of people have commented on was the fact that the performance at Villa Park might have been aided by Villa's unwellness, but also came when Jack Wilshere was on the bench. Is it a case of... No, I just mean that, you know, I like Wilshere and I think he's played really well at times this season. I thought he was outstanding against Manchester City.
Yeah.
But in this system, is it a case of either or with him or Aaron Ramsey?
Yeah, I think so. It's certainly for a game like Tottenham. If you're going to play, I don't know, Burnley at home or something, a game that you're expected to dominate, maybe you don't need Mikel Arteta or Flamini for that kind of game because you're going to have so much of the ball. But you could probably pair Wilshere and Ramsey then. But yeah, I think that the part of the early season system, it was almost a way of getting Ramsey and Wilshere into the same team together. And I actually thought they were hitting it off, and that City performance was really good. As you rightly point out, Wilshere was brilliant in that game. It was just such a pity that then the Dortmund match came on the back of that, where they didn't click at all. So that's the negative that's kind of imprinted on our minds at the moment. But yeah, on current form, I would be tempted to pick Jack Wilshere ahead of Aaron Ramsey because I just think he's in better form than Ramsey. But as he proved many times last year, he's a player that's well worth persisting with because he will score goals. So I don't see the manager giving him a break anytime soon. It's a real battle between those two, and it is a pity that there has to be one or the other in that 4-2-3-1.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's one of those things that could spur both players on. And the thing about Ramsey is that even when he isn't playing particularly well, he can get you that goal, as he's done three times this season. But I think Wilshere's capable as well. But look, I guess it's a good problem for the manager to have.
I suppose you just wonder who's going to be the more defensive player. I mean, they could share the workload and they could just take turns like midfielders used to do in the old days. You didn't have a sitting midfielder. Both midfielders would get back and both would go forward. It's doable, but I just think in a big game, it's probably maybe a step too far at the moment for those two to play on their own. So, if Erz was going to be in that hole and it's going to be 4-2-3-1, I think at the moment it's Ramsey or Jack.
Okay, all right. Looking ahead then this weekend to the North London Derby, and always a huge game and a huge occasion, and there is in this Arsenal team now a very English or British core who understand the meaning of this game. But I think when you when you've got players like Alexis, when you've got players like Ozil who come to the club having experienced the Barcelona Real Madrid derby, for example, they don't necessarily need that much education in terms of what the game means in the overall scheme of things.
Wouldn't have thought so. No, Alexis seems like the kind of player that would relish a bit of a ding-dong battle. He's everywhere, isn't he? He likes to get stuck in. I noticed this week he's level pegging inside the top 10 with Flamini as the one of the dirtiest players in the Premier League,
which was
quite funny. By dirty, I mean by making the most fouls each game. He's in the top 10.
Is he also in the top 10 of the most fouled? Because I'd say
that's a good question. I have to look that one up. He must be, but he loves the physical side of it, doesn't he? And I sense this might be his type of match. Look, it's going to be fast and furious, and even though Arsenal, we've done well against Spurs the last three times, clean sheets, two of those games, the two league games, were quite tough, weren't they? And Spurs did put a lot of pressure on the team, and they did knock Arsenal out of their stride. And under Pochettino, there's a danger that with that pressing game that they might do that again. Because if there's one thing Arsenal's players have been proven not to like, it's being kind of harassed, like Dortmund did. So you can be sure that Tottenham will try and copy what Dortmund did to the Gunners just a week or two ago. So we've got to be ready for it this time.
Yeah, I mean, you think that would be their approach, is to try and use that Dortmund match as... I mean, it's more difficult for them to do away from home, is it?
Yeah, but I think any team that plays Arsenal would try and emulate that. It's not just Dortmund, is it? Liverpool did it last year, Chelsea did it. When you really get in the face of Arsenal's kind of attacking players and harass them and be strong and whatnot, it has proven to be effective at times. So that's something Arsenal in the big games and against the best opposition have just got to be wise to it, and they've got to be ready to and have an answer for that moving forward. So that's what I'm most looking forward to seeing. I want to see Arsenal toughen up a touch and really, really be ready to handle. I mean, they did against City, to be honest, on home turf. I thought they played really aggressively and they did it well. And I think it'll be that type of match again. Spurs would definitely try and rattle Arsenal.
Yeah, and it is one of those games, isn't it, where form isn't really a factor. Spurs haven't been convincing this season under Pochettino, but, he did a tremendous job at Southampton. And may just take a bit of time, but regardless of that, it's one of those games where pretty much anything can happen.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. It's one of those. I never like to jinx it. I always like to tip up Spurs in the hope that I'm proven wrong. I'm sure we're all quite similar in that regard. There's a couple of things that made me slightly nervous. The most thing I'm worried about is counter-attacks. I feel that we haven't really got to grips with that yet. If even in early on against Aston Villa, if they'd have been a little bit more clinical, they could have hurt us on the counter. And it seems like every team we play against gets a little bit of joy in that regard, even Southampton the other night. So with those guys like Lamela and Eriksen and Chadli to a certain degree, they've got those players that can hurt Arsenal. We've got to watch for that.
Yeah, one of the questions we got on the Arscast Extra on Monday was whether we would be more concerned about an opposition corner or a counter-attack from when we have a corner. I mean, is that the kind of thing that's got to be worked on the training ground in the way that the team is set up? Like, who's going forward? Who's going to sit? How quickly people get back? I mean, surely there's a lesson to be learned from what happened at Dortmund.
Yeah, I think so. I did notice at Villa, nothing really came of the corners that Villa had, but I did notice there was a slight change and the markers, kind of the zone, edged a couple of yards further out, closer to the guys that were attacking the ball.
Yeah.
So I think that's something they've been working on. So I would hope that we won't be allowing runners a free, you know, to get like a 5-yard run up and climb above Arsenal's defence. So I think hopefully that'll be addressed. In terms of the counter-attacking, it's kind of just it's Arsenal's way, isn't it, to push those full-backs on. And I don't see that stopping anytime soon. If Arsenal had maybe a more mobile midfielder than Mikel Arteta or Flamini, it wouldn't be such an issue because they can get across quickly and provide good cover. But as we saw with Flamini against City, he struggled a little bit in that regard. And when City broke on him, he was also floundering. So that is the worry. Personally, I would be a bit more cautious and only let one fullback go forward at a time. But Arsenal have been playing this way for years and years and years now, so I don't think it's going to change overnight.
All right. Okay. Well, look, we'll keep fingers crossed that none of those bad things happen when all the good stuff that we want to happen in a North London derby comes to pass. Adrian Clark, thank you very much.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thank you to Adrian. You can find him on Arsenal.com, of course, doing the breakdown for every league game, and you'll get him on Twitter as well if you want to follow. It's at Adrian J. Clark, Clark with an E. That's at Adrian J. Clark, Clark with an E. Oh, another Clark who's partial to an E now and again, but that's neither here nor there. More stuff in a minute.
Hi. I'm Stan Kroenke, and I understand that there's been some disconcertation this week about the money I paid myself from Arsenal. I understand people might be suspicious, but I'm nothing if not transparent, so I'm going to explain to you, no, I'm going to act out exactly how this came to pass. Come in. Oh, morning, Stan. Good morning, Stan. How are you today, big fella? Oh, I'm a little blue, I gotta say. Why is that? Well, it's this girl. I really like her, but she doesn't seem to notice me. Well, I've got some advice. What's that? Well, how about you drive by in your limousine, holding up a sign saying, I'm worth billions of dollars. That is good advice. That's what I'm here for, Stan. Anytime you need my strategic and advisory services, you just come a knock-in. I sure will, Stan. Now, that'll be £3 million. Oh, Stan, you're such a card. No, I mean it. Give me £3 million, or I'll shoot you in the face.
Now, I know I said earlier that I just kind of make this podcast up as I go along, which is true for the most part, but some things you have to prepare. And I was looking for something today in the archives of the old Arscasts, and there's stuff in there that you know, you try certain things, right? You try and make something that could be quite funny or, you know, that might have a bit of mileage. And I came across something called Shamak Obama, which was obviously an attempt to shoehorn Shamak and Barack Obama into a kind of sketch or a character that might work. And I was looking at it, going, I don't remember doing that at all. It was weird. I have to figure out when it was exactly. I have it right here. It was from August 2010. And there was a thing, and a file there called Shamak Obama. So I played it. And I was left even more confused afterwards because this is what it was.
Welcome, everybody. Please have a seat. Have a seat. It is wonderful to see all of you.
You killed our pelicans, you British asshole.
So a number of questions went through my mind when I was listening to that. Firstly, Barack Obama, Marwan Shamak, and pelicans? What the fuck? What have pelicans got to do with anything? And then, which one of them was the British asshole? And where did that silly voice come from? So there you go. An inner look at the workings of the Arsecast and things that don't make it. And for good reason, it has to be said. Conceptually, Shamak Obama, it's good. It rolls off the tongue. You know, the name is good, but the material was slightly lacking. I'm not sure there's a lot of traction in politicians, CrossFit Arsenal players. I mean, who else could you have? John F. Ray Kennedy? No. Gandhi and Wright? No. No, I've gone too far with this now. We're really stretching it already. So anyway, there you go. That's stuff that doesn't work and still doesn't. And, yeah, okay. Right. Last week, I gave you a chance to win a copy of Together, the story of Arsenal's unbeaten season. And the question was, what number did Lauren wear in the unbeaten season? What number did he wear on his back? The number was 12. And the winner, the random number generator has picked, is Pierre Martin. I guess it's Pierre Martin, no? I guess. I could be completely wrong. Pierre, well done to you. I will be in touch. I'll drop you an email. I'll get your address and we'll get the book out to you as quick as we can. For those waiting on the audiobook, it should, all things going well, it should be out today, available on the Arseblog shop. Just a final couple of things to test. I'll be doing that this morning if you're listening to this on Friday, and it will be available. It's about a 400 megabyte download, which is probably a bit bigger than a normal audiobook, and it's set in a way that it's individual chapters. Each file is an individual chapter. So, I think that's the way to do it. And, it'll be available on site with some instructions about how to download, because it's a bit specific, I think, in terms of the shop software. So pay close attention to the instructions when they're posted on the site. I'll put a post up on arseblog.com. Other than that, let's think, the live thing, the Arseblog live event taking place in Union Chapel Bar on Monday, the 6th of October. It's the Arsecast Extra. Myself and James will be there. Sold out. Thank you very much. Surprisingly, you know, the tickets went in about 18 hours, something like that. We, you know, didn't even have them on sale a day, and they were all sold out. There were only, I think, 140 entries or tickets, because it's not the biggest venue in the world. So maybe if we do this again, provided the audience doesn't bottle us off the stage, we'll try and find somewhere a little bit bigger the next time around. So thank you. We're looking forward to doing that on October the 6th. And now we just have to look ahead to the Tottenham game tomorrow. One of those games where form really goes out the window, as we know. They haven't been inspired yet by Pochettino. But he did a very good job, obviously, at Southampton. We go into the game. The only injury news or team news that we have is that Matthew Flamini might be back after suffering a dead leg. So that's something, I guess. But everybody else, apart from the long-termers, Debuchy, Giroud, Theo Walcott, not back yet. He was never supposed to be back for this game anyway, so makes no difference there. They're not in the squad. But apart from that, it seems everybody else is fit and healthy, and it remains to be seen how the manager approaches the game, because the system that worked so well at Villa Park, you'd like to think that he sticks with it, because it seemed to get the best out of the players that we have. A couple of changes in the team. Probably you'd think that Alexis will come in for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right-hand side, which makes sense, considering he can take the free kicks and he's got 4 goals since he started, and he's he's been one of our best players so far this season. In terms of his end product, I think he can play better overall. But and I think if we can get Welbeck and Ozil on the same wavelength again, then we've got plenty that can do them damage. But one of those games, isn't it? You just never quite know. 5:30 kickoff as well. So that should be fun. Make for a good atmosphere anyway. People will have had a pint or two before they go along to the stadium. And, you know, let's hope we can put in a performance similar to the one against Villa. The games against Tottenham last season, if you remember, 2-1-0 wins in the league. I remember the game at the Emirates was a little bit sketchy. Chesney had to make a brilliant save, I think, in the second half. Deflected shot, and he got down to save it. And the game at White Hart Lane, as we know, Rosicki cunted that one into the top corner in the opening minutes. And then we were pretty much under bombardment for the rest of the game from Tottenham. Whether or not they can do that to us again, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, you have to fancy your chances at home. 3 points would be very nice indeed after what was a great weekend last weekend with everyone else having a pretty poor time, a hilariously poor time. So we could hope for much the same again. If we can beat Tottenham, that takes care of one of those things. That means we win and Spurs lose all in one go. And then the rest of them, if they could all just, you know, go fuck themselves and lose as well, that would be ideal. So what we'll do on Monday on the Arsecast Extra is we'll look back on the weekend, dissect the North London Derby and everything else. Let's keep fingers crossed for a good result, and I'll talk to you on next week's Arsecast. So until then, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Yes, hello. Yes, this is MI5. You want to report a terrorist plot? Okay, but by who is it? ISIS? Al-Qaeda? The super-duper IRA? Barack Obama and Marouane Chamakh. The guy who used to not score for Arsenal. Yeah, him. Okay. And what does this plot entail? Pelicans. A fleet of Pelican bombs. Uh-huh. Going to be unleashed worldwide, you say? I see. And, any idea who the mastermind behind all this is? Harvey Keitel, the actor from The Piano, yeah? I see. Okay, well, look, thanks for that. You have our assurance we're really going to take this seriously. Oh,
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.